There's been a lot of changes that have happened in Epilepsy Tasmania, and we're really excited that there are more and more people that are responding to those and now talking to us about their epilepsy or the person that they're supporting who has epilepsy. So it's been really very active space the last while.
In particular, you mentioned a minute ago, before I turned the microphone on, about some new statistics you've got that sound most interesting.
Yes, well, we've known a lot around what epilepsy in Tasmania looks like anecdotally and based on other information that's come from other sources, and we've just transferred it to Tasmania's population. But in the last 18 months to 2 years, we've had two surveys that we've been offering for people to start to talk to us. From those surveys, we've had some findings that confirm what we anecdotally thought, but also telling us some other things that have surprised us. And we're looking forward to unpacking those a little bit more and talking with more people around their epilepsy to provide directly what it is that they need.
Bearing in mind that, as you said, you do need to study them a little bit more, what at the moment can you say that you've learnt from the surveys?
Because one of the things that we now know is that from Victorian information, that epilepsy sits in the top five of avoidable deaths for people aged between 5 and 45. So we've been going to try to work that out from us. So what our research in Tassie has shown us is that of the top seizures that are sorts of epilepsy that are avoidable, the top three of those are people having what's called a tonic-clonic seizure, which is one where people traditionally know as the one where people look like they're having a fit and they're doing a lot of wriggling and falling to the ground, or a seizure while they're asleep, or a seizure which is called absence seizures, which is where somebody looks like they're just vaguely staring out the window and they're not there. And those top three types of seizures are the ones that are significantly causing people to, unfortunately, to die prematurely. So what we now know in Tassie is that we're pretty well on the mark of those, and that we need to be putting more energy in for people to be able to understand what their epilepsy is and the effect it has on them, but more importantly for their friends, their families, their workmates, their school colleagues, to get epilepsy awareness training and first aid training so that they can very quickly address people in those significant components of their seizures. But one of the other interesting things that we found through it was that approximately 10% of people with epilepsy didn't really know or were not able to articulate what types of epilepsy they had. And we understand that for us it was significantly high how many people were not able to receive medication. So we understand from it that one of the things that we understood from people prior to the survey was that isolation and discrimination are a particular issue. And what the survey has shown us is that 90% of people either feel discriminated against or feel isolated. So that's a very, very high support, and that's including the people that are supporting them.
How do you explain that high number? That seems extraordinary to me.
I think it's because people don't understand what epilepsy is, and so because they don't understand it, they don't know how to actually support somebody who's living with epilepsy. So, and because people with epilepsy also feel that because the community as a whole doesn't understand it, there's people who, you still hear stories about people who have issues in their workplace because they have epilepsy in the workplace, doesn't know how to associate with them, or we unfortunately still hear stories about people who were told one of the reasons that they didn't get a job was because they have epilepsy and the workplace doesn't know how to deal with that. So it's a lot to do with lack of knowledge, lack of conversation, and lack of information about what epilepsy is. So people still sit with a misunderstanding of it. So we're working really hard to try to help people to talk more about what epilepsy is, to get epilepsy awareness training, and for people with epilepsy to be able to communicate what they need. Because when you've got over 44 different sorts of seizures, not one person with epilepsy will have the same needs. Everybody with epilepsy have very different needs about what they need for their epilepsy, for their support, for their health and well-being, and for all of those kind of issues around that. One of the most important things that a person with epilepsy can do is to be able to articulate what their epilepsy is, how it affects them, what are some of the triggers for them. So for some people it can be heat can be a trigger. For other people it can be stress could be a trigger, lack of sleep, eating the wrong food. So every person that has epilepsy, the best gift that somebody who's supporting them or through it, whatever means, is to actually ask them to tell their story.
Even watching TV or playing games on the screen for long periods of time can set some people off.
Yes, and that's part of the issue we have with many students that have trouble attaining an education, because the epilepsy will fatigue them, but also they need to have a special screen cover on their computer, but their school environment doesn't necessarily know where they can get that from or that it's even available. So there are lots of little things that people can do to make it easier. But again, the most important thing is to ask somebody to tell their story about what their epilepsy is, and ask the people that are supporting them whether they notice what some triggers might be as well.
And Wendy, prior to us speaking today, one thing I'd actually thought was, thank goodness we're not going to have to talk about breaking down the barriers of epilepsy and explaining that, you know, people such as Julius Caesar had epilepsy and you can achieve amazing things in life with the condition. Yet it's really sad to hear that there is still so much misunderstanding about it in 2018. That really surprises and saddens me that that's the case.
But it's getting better. No, Paul, when I first started, we were living in the era where people were, you hid every part of identity about who they were. There were no names. You'd change their voice on a radio. You'd fog out their face in front of a TV screen. That's only 2 years ago. But since that time, we've got more and more people who want to tell their story, and we have a number of people now with our inaugural exhibition that we had this year in March in the ABC foyer, where we showcased, we had 12 people who actually wanted to tell their story about their experiences with epilepsy, and it was had their photos taken, and now we can quite easily have people, if we want media to have a conversation, we can usually find somebody now that will come and tell their story, and they'll tell the positive components as well as the difficult, really hard hitting stories as well. So, because it is very confronting, it is very consuming, but there are more and more people that want to talk about it. So we've had a family in another part of the state where mum died just after I started. She had what's called SUDEP, which is sudden and unexplained death from epilepsy, and so that's about half the people who have epilepsy die that way, and the other half of people are as a result of perhaps an injury from the seizure that they have. But this young family, they've become very, very strong ambassadors for epilepsy. And we've started this year, we had a Father's Day keep cups. So we got in keep cups as our way of war of waste, and we got some black ones for Father's Day, which are what dads told us they wanted. And this little young girl, at the end of last week, we were presented with a cheque. She sold nearly 200 keep cups. And for her dad says for her, it has been an incredibly healing process for her to be able to do something positive for other people and other children her age or other families that might be experiencing a parent with epilepsy. So her story's been a very healing for her grief to contribute back positively to the community, to tell her story and to work in that space.
And I dare say boosting her confidence as well.
Absolutely, absolutely. She's a war on waste person, particularly in her school. So for her, it ticked so many boxes around that for her, and she's become, Dad's describes her as being much, much brighter and healthier as a result of taking on this, what she called her campaign for Father's Day.
And Wendy, when you talk about the deaths that occur as a result of the condition, how many of them are avoidable?
Many of them are avoidable because, for example, there are people that might have a seizure while they're driving, and then so they might, you know, accidentally have an accident as a result of that. That they could have a seizure while they're swimming, and then they can drown. So a lot of them are avoidable by more community awareness and understanding about what it is, by people again knowing what their triggers are and how to look after that. So we know that diet has a significant impact. We know that stress does. We know that people significantly have issues around anxiety and depression. So exercise, stress, a workplace or a home or an environment that supports them significantly. So it is avoidable in many cases. But you have approximately 60 to 70% of people that have medication but it can take two or three goes or a number of years before the medication works. So you've still got 30% approximately of the population where medication doesn't work. So it's really important that some of those other things around diet and, as I said, a healthy workplace and light and all those things are known, so it is avoidable.
And Wendy, we've barely got through, I wouldn't say we've even got through half of what we were meant to talk about today, yet sadly looking at the clock, time is ticking on. I think that's a good excuse for us to talk again soon. Is there any final message for the community that you'd like to share today?
I think for me, one of the final messages is you know, it's always a mistake to assume that you understand something about somebody else's health and well-being. So I think for me, I'm very much about us being as kind as we can to each other, as supportive as we can to each other, and I always like to think that it's very good to be inquisitive and curious about another person's life and get them to talk about it. So that, for me, are my really big takeaways and constant messages.
And as you were saying earlier, that for people to actually talk about their condition, it breaks down the barriers and leads to understanding, and it's through understanding that the entire community benefits.
It certainly does. It becomes a normal part of everyday life and a normal conversation to have, not something that's seen to be fearful or to be avoided. So it's sort of the elephant in the room. We talk about it.
Yeah. Wendy, we will talk again soon so we can go through the rest of what we were meant to talk about today. Thank you very much for your time, and keep spreading the good word.
Thank you, Paul.